This is an Equity Mates Media podcast.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Equity Minds.
I will say this about investing. Everything you do learn is cumulative. What I learned at 20 is you.
Equity.
Welcome to another episode of Equity Mates, a podcast that follows our journey of investing. Whether you're an absolute beginner or approaching Warren Buffett status, our aim is to help break down your barriers from beginning to dividend. My name is Bryce, and as always, I'm joined by my equity buddy, Ren. How's it going?
I'm very good, Bryce. Very excited for this episode for three big reasons.
Okay.
We're back in the studio.
Yes.
We're double vaxxed.
Yes.
And we're taking our Mondays back.
That's right. We're getting back to some EM chat, the good old days of just talking about what's on our radar when it comes to the world of investing and finance and business. And today we've got four big topics to get through. We're going to have a look at what is going on in worldwide shipping, People's Australia Post taking longer than expected. We're going to chat about active managers struggling, the metaverse, and can Bitcoin reach that 500K mark?
Yeah, you love to hear that.
Oh, I'd love to hear that. I'd love to see it.
But let's get stuck in. There's a lot happening in investing markets. We've obviously had a very busy schedule and haven't had a chance to cover all of this. So we're going to try and hit a number of these topics in this episode. So you wanted to talk about shipping. In fact, you were insistent that this episode covers shipping. I know you're thirstily waiting for a few Australia Post parcels, so it's top of the list for you. So let's start there.
Yeah, well, given your lack of e-commerce shopping, you're probably unaware of what's going on.
I wouldn't have a clue.
In fact, I don't think Australia Post even delivers to your house.
They actually don't. It's been a real frustration.
So yes, look, COVID no doubt is significantly impacting both international and domestic supply chains. Well, in Australia, we all are aware of what's going on with Australia Post because no one is receiving their packages on time. 500 Australia Post workers are in isolation at the moment, so they had to pause their parcel pickup from e-commerce for 3 days. To me, that doesn't really make a lot of sense because then there's just going to be backup on backup, but you got to do what you got to do. I'm not questioning it.
And I also think that it probably makes sense to them, those inside the building.
Fair call.
Really unfortunate timing for us because it was announced the day after our book sold out on Amazon and Booktopia.
I know, it's a real, yeah.
But if you are waiting for a book, it will come.
We have no idea when. So if you got one, congratulations. But also, not only AusPost closing down for a couple of days, but online orders are now at Christmas levels that we saw in 2020. E-commerce for online is up 473% in terms of parcels coming through AusPost. So huge impact on supply chains here in Australia. But I'm more interested at what's going on at global level because it's not just Australia Post, Ren. The economic reopening after COVID that we saw in America and Europe has just spurred demand for goods and raw materials. We've seen, you know, housing, raw materials, inputs drastically increase, and these supply chains are now coming under a lot of stress. But not only that, the virus now continues to disrupt you know, significant areas of the supply chain. So we're seeing workforces impacted. We're seeing crews on ships getting COVID and having to get turned around. And there's no better example of that than what's going on in the Californian ports at the moment with ships being turned around. I think there's 56 ships sitting out at sea in California.
Mm.
So it's pretty interesting what's going on. But I think the biggest sort of investing lens for me is what impact is this having?
Yeah, well, I think there's a few more things, but I think to separate what you're saying, there's a demand side, which is people like you are just sitting at home ordering stuff online all day and the demand is surging.
Yeah.
And then there's a supply side, and international shipping picked COVID wrong. They forecast that COVID would depress international shipping, and then it really picked up and they were surprised by it. And they're still recovering, and there's just unbelievable queues. But I think the cost of moving a container from China to Europe has jumped 600%.
Yeah.
So just like crazy cost increases. But there's also all these other unforeseen things. Like there was that explosion at that Chinese port, Tianjin, which is like one of China's main shipping ports and stuff like that. It's just like everything that could go wrong on the supply side has gone wrong on the supply side.
And to put that price increase into perspective, that is over the last year alone, that 600%, and that's the highest it's been since 2008. And anywhere you look online, if you want to dig a bit deeper into this, you know, and have a look at what's going on, the flow-on effect of that is obviously increases in prices, because if old Joe Bloggs in a shoe warehouse here in Australia is trying to import all of this product from China or from Europe or wherever it may be, but the cost of shipping every few months is increasing 100%, 100%, 100%, then we know that that's going to have flow-on effects.
Well, let's put a pin in pricing, because there's some stuff more generally that I want to talk about, but let's focus on shipping. So I'm an investor in 2021. I don't want to buy an NFT or Dogecoin. I hear that shipping is going to the moon.
shipping's the next big thing.
What's a poor investor to do about it?
Well, look, the boat may have sailed on this one. But if you were lucky enough to recognize what was going on a year ago, I had a look at some of the performance of some of the big shipping companies around the world. So the biggest is AP Moller Maersk, and they are swimming in profits. They've increased their profit estimates by $5 billion. That's pretty incredible to go to the market and say, hey, we've kind of got the profiting wrong. We're bumping it up by 5B.
Put that in context, though, like as a percentage, is that like 1% of their overall profit?
That's up 100%. Up 100% over the last year. The third largest carrier in the world, CMA CGM, they have said that they're freezing their spot rate when it comes to what they're charging to preserve their long-term client relationships. So that actually means they're saying no to any further profit from here. They're saying that if we increase our prices any more, we are at risk of actually losing customers, because it's just such an increase that it's putting demand on their customers. So pretty impressive. But then I also had to think, well, what does it mean for retailers here in Australia? We know that our book's sold out and it's really hard to get access to product. And if you're trying to buy things for Christmas yourself, you might find that they're A, not available, or huge delays.
Yeah. Weren't like Amazon or someone saying start buying Christmas presents now?
Now. Yeah, yeah, they are. They're saying don't wait till December.
I mean, good marketing tactic.
Seriously, rookie, good marketing tactic. But Kogan.com, we know that he has significant excess stock. He kind of got COVID wrong in a way.
Yeah. And he spoke about that when we interviewed him.
Yeah. He's not shying away from it.
Yeah.
This might play into his favor. As a retailer here in Australia, he's got stock and he doesn't need to be waiting for too many suppliers to be giving it to him from overseas. So maybe less impacted by supply chain. So keep an eye on how that plays out amongst other e-commerce retailers here in Australia.
Yeah, but it's two-speed, because even if he's got stock in warehouses, if Australia Post and DHL and FedEx can't get it to your door, he's got a supply issue. He doesn't have bricks and mortar stores that we can go to.
No, but he'll at least have the stock. Some suppliers might say, we've actually can't get these TVs into Australia in time. So, yeah, we're just going to take them off.
Yeah.
But anyway, a lot going on, so that's kind of high level. The big shipping companies are just, you know, really reaping the rewards, I guess.
Yeah. And in terms of how long this will take to unwind, people expect it will take a while. I mean, some people are saying 2022, some people are saying 2023, but really this supply and demand equation needs to equalize. Like, it is out of equilibrium right now, and either demand needs to come down to sort of more normalized levels. But I think shopping habits will die hard. Like, shopping habits will have changed in this pandemic. So if demand remains elevated, supply needs to catch up. And it will. But, you know, ships were put in dry dock and were being repaired, and now they're coming back online. And, you know, they need to get containers to the right place. China needs to rebuild this port that exploded. Like, there's a lot of things. And then that backlog just needs to clear. But it will unwind in the same way that lumber unwound. Like, lumber, if you remember earlier in this year, just went to the moon as well. And that was because Canadian lumber mills got COVID wrong as well. Or were they shut down and then they didn't reopen quickly enough? Home building demand skyrocketed in the US. They couldn't get enough Canadian lumber, so prices just went to the moon. But mills came back online. They caught up. The supply side caught up with the demand side, and prices have come back down. It will happen. You know, the cure to high prices is high prices. If prices stay high, more supply comes online, and supply and demand equalize.
Well, speaking of prices, this then begs the question, and we should probably have a chat about, what does this mean from the point of view of inflation?
Yeah, now inflation is a big narrative that's happening more in the US than in Australia. But as with everything culturally and economically, what starts in the US seems to seep out around the world. So the inflation story is one of the big stories in the US, and you're seeing it across the economy over there. Shipping, which you just touched on, is a big contributor to it because it raises the price of raw materials.
Yeah.
It raises the price of inputs across the economy. When we're seeing outputs, like the cost of food, especially meat in the US, is just going through the roof. It's pretty unbelievable. The Biden administration had some adjusted inflation metric, which there were a bunch of meme pages referring to, like, similar to what WeWork did when it was like community adjusted EBITDA. When WeWork tried to go public.
What'd they do?
They just like stripped out a whole bunch of key buckets of from the CPI petrol, index, yeah, like, and like food and stuff, like what? Meat and stuff like that. And they were like, if you take these out, inflation isn't that bad. But shipping is a key contributor to inflation. But the other one that I think is really important to watch is wages. Because if we talk about things, supply and demand being out of whack, in the US at the moment, the supply and demand for labor is out of whack. There is just a desperation to get people
There's
into
a massive
jobs.
Isn't there a labor shortage?
Labor shortage,
yeah.
And labor shortage, but then also high unemployment and a lot, like, there. It's just like the dynamics of people taking government assistance and not going back to work, or people being able to like leave jobs, and like the labor mobility is at an all-time high. And these are all good things. But what it has meant is that prices for labor are just going up. So Amazon obviously raised their wage to $15 a few years ago, like pre-pandemic, and that's had massive ripple effects. There's some really interesting economic studies that are coming out that show how Amazon, because they're so big, they basically set a price floor in communities. And you can see when Amazon, with their $15 minimum wage, open a new warehouse in a new community, that lifts wages everywhere, because now all of a sudden every employer is competing with that $15 minimum wage that Amazon is offering. Which is great to see in the States. But Amazon have just announced they're hiring another 125,000 workers with an average starting wage of $18 an hour. So they continue to raise wages. A lot of other big businesses are responding. So Walmart have raised their minimum wage 3 times in the past 12 months.
Wow.
Their average starting wage, I think, is now in the 16s. And you got to remember that US national minimum wage is like $7 or something.
Yeah.
Target followed suit. A bunch of other companies have followed suit. But then what companies are doing is then they're so desperate for labor, they're throwing in other benefits. So Walmart have announced they're paying the college tuition, or willing to pay the college tuition, of all 1.5 million employees.
Wow.
And college tuition in the States is expensive. Target then followed suit. Chipotle have followed suit. A bunch of other companies are now basically just throwing money at labor to get them in the door.
But is the shortage because people just don't want to go back to their old jobs? Or, like, Is it because there's so many new jobs coming online?
It's because they're all trading NFTs.
Yeah, well, that's the thing.
It's multiple factors. Like, a lot of people don't want to go to their jobs because, well, there was concern about COVID and stuff like that, yeah. And there was government assistance, so it was like, I don't want to take that risk. But also the labor market is so hot, there's so many opportunities outside of minimum wage at Walmart or Chipotle or Target and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's multiple reasons. But if shipping is a key input across the economy, labor is also a key input across the economy. And they're both very hot at the moment.
Yeah.
So I think to close out this inflation conversation, what does it mean as investors? I think you just have to be ready that inflation is back in the US. And how is it transitory? Is it a base effect or is it here to stay? Are all open questions. Will the labor market find an equilibrium and level out? Will the shipping market similarly return to a sort of, you know, normal level? They're all big questions at the moment, but right now there's inflation and you've got to invest accordingly. So companies that can raise prices or, you know, that are in industries that are growing faster than inflation, avoiding, you know, like commodity products that are price takers, not price makers, you know, all that sort of core investing stuff when it comes to investing in inflation. Don't invest in bonds unless they're like inflation protected bonds, floating, you know, that kind of stuff. Yeah. Don't leave your money in a savings account.
No. The last one. Don't go 0.01% interest.
Apparently in the States, the average interest rate at a bricks and mortar bank on a savings account, 6 basis points.
Wow.
0.06% interest.
Sounds like similar to here in Australia.
Yeah. And then
I haven't done my research in Australia though. Anyway, going to leave you with a bit of a quote from Naval, a big thinker. Check him out on Twitter, at Naval. He says, the paradox of inflation is that employment, investment, and wealth all boom before the house of cards collapses. So just leave you with that to ponder.
Oh, how deep from priceless.
Yeah, no, from Naval, yes. We'll leave it there and we will move on to have a chat about why active managers are really struggling at the moment. But before we do, we'll just take a quick break.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So, Ren, we've spoken about active management versus passive investing here on the show plenty of times, and the big debate around whether or not it's worth paying the fees when it comes to, you know, putting your money with some active managers. And there have been times where they've done really well. There have been times where they have certainly underperformed. We know that some 90% plus of active managers struggle to outperform the market, and we're really starting to see that at the moment.
Yeah. I want to take you back to the early 1990s and 2000s. If you're a hedge fund manager, you were a god. Like, you were a billionaire. You were seen as, like, you know, not the king of the world, but, like, there was some term which I've forgotten. But
the Wolf of Wall Street?
No, it was like, I can't remember. But, like, hedge fund managers were it when it came to markets. And you saw people come up like Dalio, Ackman, Greenblatt, cut me saying, like, those names that we all know, like, they got it when the going was good and they became billionaires off the back of being hedge fund managers. When's the last time you've heard of, like, a new superstar hedge fund manager come through?
Kathy Wood.
Well, yeah, okay, but she's active, yeah.
Frazzis,
yeah. It's tough to be an active manager right now. And Bridgewater, which is Ray Dalio's firm that he founded, Bridgewater Associates, they're kind of the canary in the coal mine for a lot of this stuff. So Bridgewater's assets reached $160 billion a few years ago, biggest hedge fund in the world. But as the market just keeps grinding higher and as the index keeps outperforming a lot of these active managers, Bridgewater is struggling. So Bridgewater lost $12.1 billion assets under management last year, redemptions from people who don't want their performance. One of the biggest pension funds in the US have just put them on notice. A $21 billion pension fund, the Orange County Employees Retirement Systems, is considering pulling their money out of the hedge fund. And the report got leaked, and it's just an interesting look at how these active managers are underperforming. So Orange County Pension have been invested in Bridgewater since 2005, and they've earned 4.5% per annum.
That's awful.
Yeah.
What the hell?
Yeah, not great. Not
from Bridgewater?
From Bridgewater, yeah.
You'd be spewing. After fees?
I assume after fees, yeah. So that's roughly 2.5% less than the benchmark index. So if they just put it in like an S&P 500 index fund, I assume that's the benchmark index, they would have done 250 basis points better. Yeah. The Bridgewater strategy has only outperformed the pension's target once in the last 5 years, and Bridgewater's strategy has lagged when it comes to both a 7-year and a 10-year time frame.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I mean, this is one of the struggles of being active manager, though, that if you have the pressure from these pension funds to be delivering whatever their target is year on year, and they don't give you the luxury and beauty of saying, we want this, well, I guess they haven't hit their 10-year time frame 10 anyway.
Years. Yeah. Like, I get the whole long-term thing, but 10 years. Yeah,
true.
Yeah. But also, like, you have to say that if people want to be long-term investors, they can just buy passive. Mm-hmm. Like, part of the reason that you go active is because you want to see more. That year-on-year outperformance.
Yeah. Okay.
I guess the interesting thing to watch here is people expect, a bit of a snowball effect with some of this stuff. If some of the big-name pension funds or endowments pull their money from active, more will follow.
I guess the question is, where are they putting it after they pull it?
Great question. Right now, I think a lot flows into private equity and then a lot flows into passive products.
Yeah.
Yeah. So private equity is the go-to spot for endowments and pensions at the moment. Yeah. Just because they're the ones getting the returns. They're getting the hedge fund-like returns in, you know, hedge funds were getting these returns in the 90s and early 2000s.
Now it's the PE boys.
Now it's PE. Some point PE will be oversaturated and, you know,
it's just going to be the passive boys.
Yeah, well, the passive boys and girls do well. They do very well. But, yeah, it's interesting. I mean, the market moves in cycles and, you know, different strategies outperform at different times. And no one's saying that pension funds and endowments are going to go to 0% active management. But I think that era of the Ray Dalios being the superstars of the market is over for now. And who knows, maybe it'll be like some of the PE boys.
What's going to be interesting when I think about this is, you know, because the same, if you look at what's happening here in Australia, one of the best performing fund managers for a very long time has been Magellan. They've drastically underperformed the market in the last 12 months. But then you speak to experts in the markets and they'll often sort of couch that in, oh, but these guys generally perform better in down markets and that sort of stuff. But I guess you have to ask yourself how long you're willing to forego market returns to have your money with someone that is potentially going to outperform when the market is trending down, and trying to pick that point is very difficult. So yeah, it's fascinating what's going on. For me, forget kind of stock picking at the moment because the market is absolutely just ripping and there is nothing wrong. I mean, if you've been in an index since 2009, if you've been in an index since the bottom of March 2020, you'd absolutely be tearing up in your portfolio.
We did a social post on Instagram looking at a bunch of the global fund managers earlier this year, and a lot of them have underperformed. The global MSCI benchmark did like 28.5%, and tough to beat that. But I think as retail investors, it's great. Like, you don't have to overthink this. When the index is driven by four or five tech companies that are trillion-dollar companies but seem to have unbelievable growth runways ahead of them, you don't have to think that much.
Mm. It'd be looking interesting to look at the 13F of Bridgewater to actually see what they're invested in.
You can do that.
I will. I'll bring that next week. Yeah, look, so there's, for me, yeah, forget stock picking really at the moment. Just Obviously.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, like, when we were doing some interviews for the book, I would say that I have a satellite, core and satellite approach where I put passive and then I have, individual stock picks in my satellite portfolio. And I would say, I don't think I can beat the market. And people would laugh at me and they're like, why are you doing it? And it's like, this is why I don't think I can beat the market, because Ray Dalio, well, he's no longer involved, but like his team can't beat the market. Like Greenblatt can't beat the market. Mm. Hamish Douglas and Magellan can't beat the market this year. Who am I to think that I can beat the market?
Of course, there's going to be people listening being like, I beat the market.
Yeah. But, you know, Frazzis beat the market. There are definitely people that can. Mm. But I think that core and satellite approach has well and truly been proven in the market that we're in now.
And also beating it over a long period of time, that's the tricky part as well. You might be able to beat it this year, being fortunate to be in a couple of stocks that jump 50% or thereabouts, but like if you try and do that over 5 or 10 years, it's very, very difficult.
Yeah, trying to beat the market when you've got like small amounts of money and you're putting it in small amounts of stocks is easy as well. Mm. It's when you have a...
$120 billion.
Yeah.
So let's move on, Ren. Another big topic that is, it's one of those things where you talk about it once and then all of a sudden you start seeing it everywhere. Well, that's for me anyway. And we spoke about it on AusBiz and maybe a couple of months ago, and now it's really, I'm seeing it everywhere. And that is discussion around the metaverse and what it all means.
This should be an offline gripe, but if you read Thought Starters, you would have heard about the metaverse about 12 months ago.
We all know I don't read Thought Starters.
Yeah, the metaverse. Well, given that you're hearing a lot about it recently, what is it?
It's bloody confusing. That's what it is. That's what it is. And I want to say at the top of this that in these episodes, I think this is going to be a topic that I want to come back to and keep exploring. I've put it on my list of things to try and get my head around in a much more comprehensive way, NFTs, how it all kind of ties together, because no doubt that if it does play out in the way that Zuckerberg is talking about and a lot of people online are talking about, it is truly transformational and it's going to be quite massive, really. So I'm sure you've got your head around it. But really, it's the immersive internet, as the Zuck explains it, and Facebook is going hard on the metaverse.
Yeah, that's it. Immersive internet. So I guess they explain like I'm five way to explain it is traditionally the internet was mediated through your computer. You had it set up in your living room or your study and you went and you sat down and you
still like
on.
Pretty common.
Then the internet was mediated through your phone and it was on you all the time. So it was no longer like fixed in a location. You walked around with it and it was ever present, but it was still mediated through that screen. What if it was ever present, but not mediated through a screen? What if it was just all around you? It was truly immersive and it was, I guess, ubiquitous. It was always on. It was always present.
Again, I get it. Explain more. like, all right, so I still have to wear something that makes it all around me, or is everything around me connected to the internet? Am I seeing things that are not real but generated by?
Yeah, so the other way to think of it is basically think of a seamless integration between the physical world, augmented reality, extended reality and virtual reality all into one seamless digital and physical world.
That's so clear. Clear as mud.
So let's get practical and talk about, because, you know, over the long term, this could take thousands of different iterations. Mm, it could be,
it's going to be massive.
Holograms. Like chips in your brain, potentially, like could be a whole bunch of stuff. But let's talk about what the metaverse is today in 2021 and why it's relevant. So Zuckerberg, in his recent Facebook earnings call, spoke about how Facebook's future was in the metaverse, and a number of different companies are making similar noise or positioning themselves in similar ways. Now, for years, Facebook have been experimenting with virtual reality. They bought Oculus, I don't even know how many years ago, but years ago now, which is that VR headset. Virtual reality headset, yeah. But the reason that's relevant today is Facebook have announced a partnership with Ray-Ban, the sunglasses maker, and they are doing something that many big tech companies before them have failed to do.
Wearable glasses.
Wearable glasses. The first iteration of the metaverse for Facebook is going to be wearable glasses that are connected to the internet and that you can, you know, take photos and videos from, that, you know, there's things like you could look up Google Maps, and so you could have the maps projected on the glasses and it could direct you.
Nothing new, as you're walking. Like Google Glasses, well, Snap.
Well, hold on. Let's just take one step back. So, you know, you could also do things like reply to messages, all of that stuff that you do on the internet through your phone. They want to be able to take it into your glasses. So that's what their vision is.
Suits me. But, I already have glasses. So,
but that does immediately lead to the question that you just asked. Google Glass and Snap Glasses.
Both failed.
Tell us about those experiments.
Well, Snap was the first to try this many years ago in some form, probably the first big dog to give it a crack, and they failed. You know, there was the whole privacy. I don't know if someone's looking at me taking photos, all that sort of jazz. So they kind of failed. Still very much playing in the augmented reality AI space, though. Google Glasses, they haven't released their latest update, have they? They've got some.
So Google Glass was released to like Silicon Valley beta testers. There was a term that was coined, glass holes.
Glass holes.
Glass holes.
Meaning, like, glass holes.
And there were like Silicon Valley bars that were banning people wearing Google Glass and all this stuff. So Google pulled it, and now they're using it for, I guess, like industrial applications and stuff like that, or they're, you know, where there's like a clear product market.
Yeah,
fit,
that makes sense.
Where it's like if you're working in a warehouse and you need to figure out like where you need to pick, where the glass is, and it can like direct you with augmented reality, stuff like that. So I think they've pulled back from the consumer side of it, but they're still just like testing and learning. But Facebook have looked at Snap, have looked at Google, have looked at their failures and said, we're going to do the same.
We're going to do the same thing, and we're going to partner with Ray-Ban. Interesting that they partnered with them. I guess I can understand why. You know who's going to nail this? Apple.
Yeah, true.
They're going to sit back and wait and then let everyone fail, and they're going to come out with these gorgeous-looking glasses that integrate with everything you've got. They brought out the AirPods and everyone hated on them, and now everyone loves them, and they're just going to swoop in and just say, guys, you all suck. We've got these glasses, and everyone's going to be like, yo.
Yeah, that is, you absolutely nailed it. Yeah. Well, people are saying that part of the reason that Snap and Google failed was their glasses just looked bad. And so people are giving Facebook credit for partnering with Ray-Ban because they're like, well, they'll look cool at least. To confront some of the concerns around being able to be filmed and like take photos when no one knows, like you're wearing glasses right now, I don't know if you're taking a photo of me if you're wearing Google glasses. Apparently there's like a light that goes on when you're recording or taking photos. I don't know if that's going to be enough to like quell these concerns, but that's sort of their build. But really, Facebook are making the bet that the world is ready, and that the world wasn't ready before, but the world is now ready for this.
I'm ready. I think it's really exciting. I think we're going into the next 10 years with this stuff is just, again, going to probably be such an advance on the last 10. We're going to be doing things that are just like, what the hell? You know, I'm going to have glasses on the golf course. It's going to be telling me how far away my shot is. It's probably going to give me a path on the green for my putting, you know, when you press A on Tiger Woods Golf. I think that the challenge is, though, switching off now is just going to be even more difficult with this. You know, the more that we immerse ourselves in internet and immerse ourselves with connecting our lives to all this stuff, moving away and having downtime is just going to be super difficult, I think. Yeah. And I think the third point for me is that it's just another example of how these big tech companies just keep churning out growth. Is just they are able to invest in all of these things and just keep creating new product and compounding, and like that's why they're the big dogs at the top of the pile at the moment, and will continue to do so, I think, for the next 10 years.
Yeah, and I think the ability to make big bets and fail, and make enough bets that enough of them succeed, is a hallmark of these companies that is probably not something we ever saw from the top end of town in years past. I was having a look at it, and there have been some monumental failures for all the tech companies. I mean, Microsoft is ridiculed for like the Windows Phone and the Microsoft Zune and stuff like that. Apple's had some big failures, especially pre-iPhone and, you know, when Jobs left and stuff like that. There's been some spectacular failures. Everyone at Google has failed with social and messaging for like 20 years, basically since they've existed. All of these companies make big bets and fail. And, you know, Facebook, maybe this will work, maybe this won't, but it's a fascinating one to track. And I think whether or not Facebook succeed with the Ray-Ban glasses, this metaverse conversation is a conversation that as investors we should be across. This is the next generation of the internet. It is going to be everywhere. It's going to be ubiquitous. It's going to be immersive. How and what that looks like and when that really comes to the fore, I guess remains to be seen. But as investors, this is something that we're early on compared to like the rest of the world, and it's worth paying attention to. We'll include in our show notes this article. So Matthew Ball is a VC in Silicon Valley, and he's become kind of like a de facto thought leader in this space. We'll include one of his articles in the show notes so people can go and read more if they want to, I guess, get their head around this metaverse conversation.
Yeah, too right, Ren. As I said at the top, this is a topic that I want to keep exploring. So stay tuned as we continue to track the progress of this. Now, to close out, final news piece is around Bitcoin. Can't have an episode without talking about Bitcoin. And the big question is, can it reach 500K?
Yeah, now, clickbait headline aside, the reason I wanted to include this was because I heard Cathy Wood, who, for people who are unfamiliar with the name, future guest on Equity Mates, if we can get her to reply to us, and current CIO of ARK Invest. They make a number of ETFs that invest in, I guess, like a lot of technology companies. You know, Cathy Wood is probably the most famous Tesla bull. She's a Bitcoin bull. She's a Square bull. She's really bullish on, I guess, the future of a lot of these tech companies. She was interviewed, and there's a clip where she spoke about Bitcoin reaching 500K that I want to play. So let's listen to that, and then let's chat about it.
If we're right, and companies continue to diversify their cash into something like Bitcoin, and institutional investors start allocating 5% of their funds towards, I'll just say Bitcoin for right now, because we did that, we framed it for Bitcoin, could be for other cryptos as well. We believe that the price will be tenfold of where it is today. So instead of 45,000, over 500,000.
So there you go. If companies and institutions all just put 5% of their money into Bitcoin, the price of one Bitcoin will go from 45,000 USD to over 500,000 USD. What does Bryce Lesky, Bitcoin bull, think of that?
It's not an argument that, or a bull case that I haven't heard before, but it's just a big if. What if they put it into something else?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, what if they put it into Ethereum? Or what if they choose to all start piling into gold? Or what if they all just start piling into commercial real estate? Well, you know what
I mean?
Yeah,
like- yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, I'm glad that you're saying that, because I was worried that you'd be like taking the same approach as that. But the logic is weak there. The logic is incredibly weak. What if everyone put 5% of their balance sheet into anything? It would go to the moon. What if everyone put what if every institution put 5% of their money into platinum, into Commonwealth Bank shares,
into equity, mate.
The question shouldn't be what would happen if. The question should be, how likely is it that?
Well, and that's what's not answered.
Because the answer to the question, what would happen if, is obvious, but not important. Yeah, the important question is, how likely is it that? And obviously there are some companies that have put some of their treasury into Bitcoin, and some institutions are getting some exposure to Bitcoin, but that is very different to making it a store of value that every institution and every endowment and every pension fund in the world is going to put money into.
Yeah, and I'm not closely following every institution and every company around the world and what they're doing with the reserve cash on their balance sheets, but it feels like the headlines that were being made, say, 6, 12 months ago when you had the Teslas and the MicroStrategies putting their cash into Bitcoin. We're not seeing any of those headlines at the moment. We're not seeing large institutions, at least I'm not anyway, could be wrong, but not seeing as much of that sort of news story coming through. So the likelihood, it feels, of this trend of everyone putting 5% of their balance is waning a little.
So the reason that Bitcoin Twitter got very excited about that, that 500K number, is if Bitcoin reaches 500K, it will have a larger market cap than gold.
Right. So it's just a marker for them to be like...
Well, it's just like that's a big milestone. That's massive, Bitcoin has crossed some pretty incredible milestones in terms of its market cap relative to other things. I think it may not be bigger than silver now, but it crossed silver, I'm pretty sure. And, you know, it's right up there in terms of like the biggest companies listed around the world. But the gold market cap is one that, you know, for people who see Bitcoin as a store of value, gold is the historical store of value. So if Bitcoin can cross gold, that would be exciting for a lot of people who are Bitcoin believers. It's just it's funny logic. Like imagine if I came on Equity Mates and gave you the thesis. Today I'm pitching Square. Because I believe that if every company in the world put 1% of their treasury into Square stock, Square would be $1 trillion company.
Yeah, I'd be like, get off the show.
And the people who are big Bitcoin believers will be yelling at us right now, being like, but there are people that are answering the how likely is it that question. But my problem is that isn't the conversation that's put forward in these online spaces, on Bitcoin Twitter, on Bitcoin Reddit and stuff like that. The price conversation is the conversation that's put forward, not the technology or the store of value or the enabling cross-border payments or, you know, any of those reasons why companies might store some of their treasuries in Bitcoin. That's not the conversation we're seeing.
No. Well, Ren, just like the metaverse, I'm going to keep tracking the price action of Bitcoin and who's putting 5% of their balance sheet in. And
So I know you're wrapping up, but I just want to tell you one funny story about crypto that came out this week. Did you see the Walmart Litecoin story?
No.
So Litecoin is a crypto that was big in the 2017 boom. Haven't seen a lot of it since, but I'm sure it's ticking along there. Someone released a fake press release saying that Walmart will now start accepting Litecoin.
And
there were media agencies that picked it up and thought it was legit, and to the point where Walmart eventually had to come out and refute it. But the price of Litecoin just shot up.
Skyrocketed. No way. Interesting. Well, maybe we'll, we can't start releasing fake press releases for some stocks, but
I reckon it's bad for crypto markets generally. Like the reason that we haven't seen a Bitcoin ETF yet is partly because people are worried that those markets can just be manipulated too easily. And so they don't want to wrap it into an ETF structure. Things like this, a fake press release that sends this crypto to the moon is not, a good case study in crypto markets can't be manipulated.
Yeah, full of trolls, the crypto world. Anyway, we have reached the end of our episode. That was a lot of fun, Ren. Four big topics that we covered. Stay tuned for next Monday as we continue to cover what's going on in markets and what's really interesting us on our investing journey. So the content doesn't stop there, though. You can find us all over the internet. We will be in the metaverse. we'll be there in the metaverse at some point. Hit us up with an email, contact@equitymates.com. We're on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter. Join our Facebook discussion group as well. And also make sure you check out our brand new website, equitymates.com. Plenty going on there. All our watch lists, a bunch of resources, books, you name it. Please do leave us a 5-star review on your podcast player if you can. We would greatly appreciate it. So, Ren, as always, we'll chat stocks next week.
Sounds good.
Equity Mates Investing Podcast is a product of Equity Mates Media. All information in this podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only. It is not intended as a substitute for professional finance, legal, or tax advice. The hosts of Equity Mates Investing Podcast are not financial professionals and are not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Before making any financial decisions, you should read the product disclosure statement and, if necessary, consult a licensed financial professional. Do not take financial advice from a podcast. For more information, head to the disclaimer page on the EquityMates website, where you can find ASIC resources and find a registered financial professional near you. In the spirit of reconciliation, EquityMates Media and the hosts of EquityMates Investing Podcast acknowledge the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea, and community. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.